Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
It's good to be here, Dennis, and there's really only one issue people want to talk about this week.
That is correct. Tonight, as you might expect, we are going to devote lots of time on this program to one issue, abortion, which made its way back into the news in a big way last week. We are going to explore this story step by step, being as clear as possible in terms of what's happened and what the ramifications are for Iowans. Laura, it started out with last week's leaked draft of a U.S. Supreme Court opinion in a high-profile abortion case out of Mississippi that showed a majority of the court appears ready to strike down Roe v. Wade. Take it from there.
So when the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in this Dobbs case, the Observer said it was very likely that they would uphold this Mississippi law that bans almost all abortions after 15 weeks. And that would be a pretty big departure for Roe v. Wade. But there are two different directions they could go. They could uphold the law and say that doesn't present an undue burden on women. And that would preserve the sort of structure of Roe and the Casey precedent from 1992. Or they could toss the entire Roe v. Wade and Casey Foundation, which, according to this leaked opinion, there are five votes on the U.S. Supreme Court to do just that. Now, again, this was only a draft from February. There's no guarantee that the alignment of justices is the same now, but it certainly looks like that's the direction they're going.
And as we say, Roe v. Wade established abortion as a constitutional right across the nation. The court confirmed last week that the draft was authentic, but said it was not final. Now, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, people seeking abortions in Iowa will still be protected by a separate state Supreme Court decision that provides an even stronger safeguard for abortion than Roe. Let's talk about that.
That's right. A lot of people last week were asking me what's going to happen in Iowa. So Iowa is not one of the states that has what's called a trigger ban that would immediately ban abortion as soon as Roe v. Wade is overturned. In Iowa, the Supreme Court held in a 5-2 decision from 2018 that the Iowa Constitution protects a woman's right to seek an abortion and that that is a fundamental right and that any restrictions on that right have to be subject to strict scrutiny. So that decision threw out a law that established a 72-hour waiting period for abortion. So for now, if the U.S. Supreme Court throws out Roe v. Wade, the Iowa Supreme Court precedent remains intact.
But the state Supreme Court is hearing a case that could revisit that decision this year.
Yes, in 2020, the legislature passed a 24-hour waiting period for all abortions. That was quickly, there was a lawsuit filed quickly. A district court ruled that law unconstitutional, citing this 2018 Iowa Supreme Court precedent. And the Iowa Supreme Court heard oral arguments in that case in February. And I listened to those oral arguments again this past week. Importantly, four of the five justices who were part of that 2018 majority are no longer on the court. But the two justices who dissented from that opinion are on the court, joined by four justices appointed by Governor Kim Reynolds.
So what happens if the state court throws out the waiting period? What else could they do?
There are several ways they could go at this bill. First of all, they don't actually have to resolve the abortion issue at all because the lawsuit challenged the legislative process through which this waiting period was attached to an unrelated bill late in the middle of the night on the last night of the legislative session. So the Iowa Supreme Court could actually say, we're striking down this law because it was passed through an illegitimate process, and then they don't have to decide right now. I don't think that's the most likely outcome, though. They could uphold the law, the waiting period, and say this doesn't pose an undue burden on women, or they could, in that opinion, completely overturn the 2018 precedent, or they could say the 2018 precedent stands, but a 24-hour waiting period is not as big a burden as a 72-hour waiting period. So there are really several ways they could approach it.
So the state Supreme Court's going to decide this potentially about the same time as the U.S. Supreme Court's going to decide its case. Do you think the state Supreme Court will wait for the national Supreme Court to make its decision?
I think they will wait for two reasons. First of all, one of the justices, Thomas Waterman, asked during the oral argument, he said, why shouldn't we wait to see what the U.S. Supreme Court does in this Mississippi case? And both he and Justice Mansfield, who were part of the dissenters from that 2018 ruling, they favored an approach very similar to the U.S. Supreme Court in Casey. They would have said a 72-hour waiting period is okay because it doesn't pose an undue burden on women, and they would not have held that the Iowa Constitution has a separate fundamental right to an abortion. So I think for them, it would be very important to wait and see whether the U.S. Supreme Court leaves some version of Casey intact or not, because if it does, for instance, if Chief Justice John Roberts is able to get somebody to come over to his position that is rumored to be uphold the Mississippi law on the grounds that a 15-week ban doesn't present an undue burden, then I think that the Iowa Supreme Court would be more likely to follow that lead. I think that the Iowa Supreme Court, they aren't going to issue an opinion advocating for something like the Casey approach without knowing whether the U.S. Supreme Court is going to throw Casey out the window.
So the question that everybody tonight in Iowa probably wants to know the answer to, would anything happen immediately in Iowa if Roe v. Wade is overturned nationally?
No, because this Iowa Supreme Court precedent is still intact. Now, if the Iowa Supreme Court comes out with a sweeping ruling that not only upholds this 24-hour waiting period, but says this 2018 case was wrongly decided and actually the Iowa Constitution doesn't present any right to an abortion at all, then I think it's likely that the legislature would act quickly and Governor Reynolds would want to quickly sign some kind of very restrictive abortion law. They already passed during the 2018 legislative session, the legislature and governor attempted to enact what was called a heartbeat bill, so a bill that would ban almost all abortions after a fetal heartbeat could be detected. So that would be almost a total abortion ban because most women don't even know that they're pregnant before a heartbeat can be detected.
So under Iowa's current law, it bans most abortions. It does allow for abortion, but it bans most of them after 20 weeks of pregnancy. So that, if I hear you correctly, would remain in effect no matter what happens with Roe.
Yes, that remains in effect. That 20-week ban actually was not even challenged as part of that litigation that led to the 2018 ruling. So that has never been challenged in court. And regardless of what the U.S. Supreme Court does, that remains intact. And if the Iowa Supreme Court takes a position like I described earlier, let's say they strike down this waiting period on the legislative process issue, and they don't go into whether this abortion precedent from 2018 was right or wrong, at that point, that leaves that precedent intact, and then the legislature would have to embark on a state constitutional amendment.
Okay, and that's our next event here. The fundamental right to abortion is being attacked by Republicans in the Iowa legislature, and they have started the process of passing the constitutional amendment. What's happened so far, and what must happen before it gets to the voters?
Yes. So Iowa's constitution is relatively difficult to amend. You may have heard of some states like California where they can get a referendum on the ballot and change their constitution frequently. In Iowa, there's no process like that. We have to have two separately elected legislatures have to pass the same language, and then it goes on a statewide ballot, and then it has to get a majority of the voters have to say yes to that language. And so they're halfway there. The Iowa House and Senate already approved an amendment that would say that the Iowa Constitution doesn't recognize any right to an abortion or any right to state funding for an abortion. So what would need to happen is Republicans would need to remain in control of both chambers of the legislature after this election. Then sometime during 2023 or 2024, they would have to pass that identical constitutional amendment language again. And then it would go on a statewide ballot, and the voters would have to approve it. And by the way, constitutional amendments are usually on a general election ballot, but they don't have to be on a general election ballot. So it's possible the legislature could schedule a vote on that amendment earlier than 2024.
So to clarify then, if the legislature were to pass it next year, 2023, they could call a special election in the fall of 2023.
Or the summer. There was actually a referendum in June of 1999. The legislature had approved a constitutional amendment that would have required a 3/5 majority for any tax increase. and that was voted down in the referendum. I think that probably they would schedule it because the Seltzer opinion polls for the Des Moines Register have indicated that this constitutional amendment is not popular. I think that it would be likely that the legislature would schedule a vote on it sometime during, let's say, the summer of 2023, when turnout, not as many people are paying attention. And of course, turnout would be much lower than in the November 2024 presidential election.
Well, we know because we've talked about this for weeks now. This year's legislative session is still going on because they're at an absolute impasse, just buried over the issue of private school scholarships funded by public money. So they're still in session. Republicans could act this session to pass more laws limiting abortion, but late last week, the governor said she's going to wait to see what the U.S. Supreme Court decides before asking lawmakers to do anything. What happens if the U.S. Supreme Court decides it in late June? Do you think she would call them back into a special session to do something on this?
I think there would be tremendous political pressure on Republicans to hold a special session before the 2022 election to try to pass some kind of very restrictive abortion law, perhaps comparable to what was passed in 2018 that was struck down. I think that that it's hard for me to imagine that they would wait. The Republican base in Iowa is absolutely solidly anti-abortion. And just to give like the 30,000 foot view, when I started following Iowa politics in the 1980s, abortion was not nearly the partisan issue that it is now. About a third of the Democrats in the Iowa legislature in the 1980s were against legal abortion. And there were quite a lot of Republicans largely representing suburban districts who were pro-choice. And that hasn't been true for a long time. The last Democrat in the Iowa legislature who didn't support abortion rights retired more than a decade ago. And the last Republican who called herself pro-choice retired in 2008. So within the legislature, I just think there would be huge pressure to do something this year and not wait until the 2023 session.
Well, when word came out last week about that leaked Supreme Court draft, and we again emphasize it's not a final opinion, that's coming out sometime in June, most likely, near the end of June, lots of Iowa officials reacted along party lines. Governor Reynolds, Chuck Grassley, and Joni Ernst. Let's talk about that.
Yes, so the statements were fairly vague. I mean, all of the Republican elected officials in Iowa have been on record for a long time not supporting abortion rights. So the governor said that the right to life is the most important freedom. She described the draft opinion as a glimmer of light. Senators Grassley and Ernst did affirm that they are what they called pro-life, but really they kept the focus in their public comments on the leak and on criticizing the breach of U.S. Supreme Court protocol rather than talking in any detail about what they might try to do if this decision comes to pass.
There was word in the Washington Post last week that Senator Ernst might lead an effort in the Senate, the U.S. Senate, to establish a nationwide 6-week limit on abortion, but she has not commented on this.
No, she hasn't. I asked her office last week about this report when I saw it. So Carolyn Kitchener is the Washington Post reporter, and her whole beat is abortion politics. And she reported on back behind the scenes negotiations among Republicans in Congress about how to react if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. And she talked about two factions. One would support a national law similar to the Mississippi law that's being considered that would be a 15-week ban, and others who say that that wouldn't go nearly far enough to eliminate abortions and would push for a 6-week ban. And she reported that Senator Ernst has been tapped to introduce that 6-week ban. There is a third faction, and NBC News reported on this last week. There are several U.S. Senate Republicans who have said they think this should be a states' rights issue, and they don't think that they would be inclined to support any national legislation at all. But I do think that if Republicans take control of the U.S. House and Senate, again, there will be pressure on them to try to pass some kind of a national ban on abortion.
What's going to be so interesting is that there are a number of states across this nation that will never accede to a national ban on abortion. And I'm in one of them on this Monday night, California. I can tell you that Governor Newsom will never, and the Democratic legislature will never accept a national ban on abortion. Never.
Well, there are states, I mean, Maryland has it. Not only do they have a law codifying Roe v. Wade, they have it added to their state constitution, and Washington state. So certainly if a national ban passed, and I think it would be unlikely to pass, well, it would the filibuster would have to be eliminated to do that, because it would be impossible for the Republicans to have 60 votes for that. But I think that that would be litigated as to whether abortion is an issue that can be regulated nationally, because there's language in the Constitution about powers that are not delegated to the federal government are the responsibility of the states. And so I've, in fact, even heard that talked about in the context of Democrats wanting to codify Roe v. Wade nationally, that the U.S. Supreme Court might strike that down and say this is an issue for states to decide for themselves.
It is 16 minutes after the hour wherever you are listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time to talk politics Iowa style and how it's affecting all of us. And boy, tonight's issue affects a lot of people. Every woman. We're talking about abortion. Iowa Republican Party Chair Jeff Kaufman said last week the Republican Party plans to fight for, in his words, defending the unborn. That was expected. Now, Iowa's three Democratic U.S. Senate candidates running for the seat now held by Republican Chuck Grassley responded quickly to word of the court's possible decision, and they all appeared on a debate televised by KCCI TV this past Saturday night. Let's talk about that.
Yes. So all of the Democratic candidates had already been on record supporting abortion rights before this news leak last week. But last week, of course, because it was on everyone's mind, they were talking about it in even stronger terms. And so former U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer said that that Congress needs to codify Roe v. Wade. She supported legislation to that effect when she was in the U.S. House. Retired Admiral Mike Franken blamed Chuck Grassley for the situation because of his role in blocking the Supreme Court confirmation of Merrick Garland and clearing the way for the confirmation of several Trump-appointed justices. He said that overturning Roe v. Wade is on him. And Glenn Hurst has been on record since last year talking about how the Senate needs to eliminate the filibuster and codify Roe v. Wade. Glenn Hurst is a family physician, and he has talked about patients he's seen. He just doesn't think that this should be an issue that the government should have any role in whatsoever.
Should say that Mr. Franken said about Senator Grassley, overturning Roe v. Wade is on him. Make that your epitaph, Senator. That's a strong statement.
It is. But as I mentioned earlier, I mean, with it, the Democratic and Republican parties in Iowa are incredibly polarized on this issue. There is hardly any space within Republican Party politics in Iowa for people to be pro-choice. There still are registered Republicans who think of themselves as pro-choice, but not in the elected officials. In fact, it's the first plank in the Republican Party platform is saying that a personhood type language and saying life begins at conception. So it's just, there is no way that the two sides will ever meet. I think that Senator Grassley, as I mentioned, his comments were a little bit vague. And I think that assuming he's nominated, I think he's very likely to be nominated, I think he'll probably try to be vague about what Congress might do in the future to regulate abortion.
I mentioned Iowa Republican Party Chair Jeff Kaufman a few minutes ago. Let's talk about briefly Iowa Democratic Party Chair Ross Wilburn. He said the fight's not over and that he is proud to stand alongside Iowans organizing for a future where our personal freedoms are protected. So again, the party lines are very well drawn.
Yes. And I mean, I saw most state legislative candidates of both sides issued statements or posted on their social media about this last week. It really was the one thing everybody in politics was talking about last week.
And we're talking about it tonight. Meanwhile, abortion made its way into the third congressional district race last week in a very big way when each of the three Republicans running there said during a debate that they believe abortion should be illegal in all circumstances and without exceptions. This being made, this statement, if you will, by hand raising on WHO-TV's debate, moderator Dave Price asking that. So that was a stunning moment visually.
Yes, and I think that, and of course, the Democratic incumbent, Cindy Axne, has been a very strong supporter of abortion rights. She was endorsed by Emily's List in her first run for Congress, in her reelection bid in 2020, and again this year. She's already voted to codify Roe v. Wade. And I'm sure that whoever the Republican nominee is, I would guess that Cindy Axne or groups aligned with her will be probably running an ad with that footage of raising the hand that there should be absolutely no exceptions, that abortion should be illegal in every circumstance.
And we know that the U.S. Senate is going to schedule a vote, has scheduled a vote on codifying it. But we also know from every bit of reporting out of Washington, there is no chance of codifying Roe v. Wade in the Senate.
No, because it would require filibuster reform. And even then, it's not clear that there are 50 votes for the Vice President Harris to even cast the tie-breaking vote. So it's definitely not happening. I think that the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer just wants to get everybody on the record.
Right. Also last week, in a small western Iowa town named Willie, the town council voted unanimously to outlaw abortion and abortion-inducing drugs within city limits. Willie became one of 50 cities in the nation to adopt that ban.
Yes, and it's not clear what the reality of that would be. I mean, how are they going to enforce whether somebody living within their city limits takes pills for a medication abortion? And that's just not something that is publicly known. Certainly, there are no abortion services currently in the town of Willie or anywhere in Carroll County, nor have there ever been abortion services provided in Carroll County, even when Planned Parenthood had more clinics around the state than they do now. So I think it's a symbolic act. I do expect to see more towns doing that. I watched a couple of press conferences last week that Planned Parenthood's affiliate in Iowa organized. And the CEO of Planned Parenthood of the North Central States said that they have been seeing that. It's not, of course, not just in Iowa. The phenomenon started in Texas. They've seen that in several other states. And she said that they're watching it carefully, but right now they don't affect it. They don't expect this to affect their operations.
And we should say that in Willie, violators would not be charged with a crime, but they could be fined $500. You mentioned Willie has no abortion providers. It has no medical providers at all in town.
Correct. Yes.
So let's put this into context. In a Des Moines Register poll last September, 57% of Iowans said abortion should be legal. In most or all cases, 38% said it should be illegal. So we have apparently a majority of people in Iowa thinking abortion should be legal in some, at least some circumstances, and yet things may happen.
Well, it was interesting because the last time the Ann Seltzer's polls had asked that same question for the Des Moines Register, which was in 2020, it was much closer. It was around 47% said should be mostly legal, most or all cases, and 45% said illegal in most or all cases. So this poll that you mentioned from last September was much more decisive as a majority, 57% to 38%. And likewise, when Seltzer has polled on this proposed constitutional amendment that would say the Iowa Constitution doesn't protect any right to an abortion, upwards of 50-55% oppose that kind of amendment, and only around 33-35% support that amendment. So it does look like the Iowa public, again, these are polls of Iowa adults, not necessarily Iowa voters, so that's a little bit different, but it does look like the Iowa public is predominantly pro-choice.
And let's put this into one more bit of context about the number of abortions performed in Iowa in the latest figures that we have.
Yes. So there was a trend for about a decade of abortions declining nationally and in Iowa, and that continued until about 2018. And then from 2018 to 2019, there was a 25% increase. It was a huge increase. And then another increase of just under 15% from 2019 to 2020. And it was of course, politicians debated over why that was happening. There were Democrats in the legislature who said it was related to the changes in the family planning program that the Republican trifecta passed in 2017 when Planned Parenthood was excluded from state-funded contraceptive care. But in any case, regardless of the reason, there are about 4,000 abortions annually performed in Iowa as of 2020. 2021 numbers have not been released yet. Usually the Iowa Department of Public Health has those numbers available in the summer, and I will definitely be requesting them. I request those numbers every year.
And the latest figures that we have is that there are about 6 abortion providers in the state. That's not a lot of abortion providers.
No, those are centers where people can get a surgical abortion. Again, medication abortion is a little bit harder to keep track of. Many people access medication abortion at clinics, but there are mail order services. And I think that some of those are gearing up and expecting what's going to happen with the U.S. Supreme Court. And so it may become a little bit more difficult to track how many abortions are happening in the state if some people are self-administering at home.
So before we move on to our second and probably last topic tonight, let's summarize this. Has this roiled, absolutely roiled politics in Iowa?
It has. And I think, again, it's something that everybody has been talking about. There will be a lot of focus. And as I said, I think that if the Iowa Supreme Court overturns that 2018 precedent, it's hard for me to see the legislature waiting until next January or February to act. I think that there will be some kind of special session called in order to do something about abortion before the election. And there are, I should also say that there are a few Iowa House Republicans who didn't support the constitutional amendment. All of them have primary challengers. And so I'll be looking to see whether any of them survive the June 7th primary.
And we will be here on Capitol Week every week to talk us through this in a clear, simple way so that we can all understand it. And so keep tuning into us on Monday Night Live and the replay on Wednesday at noon. One more story, and it's a big one, and it broke today based upon something that happened last week. Last week, the Democratic Party in Iowa promised to revamp its caucuses as party leaders began this formal application process to try to keep its first in the nation status. Today, the Washington Post reported there's a little challenge going on to Iowa by a few states.
Yes, there are a lot of states vying to be in that early group of four or five states, at least 14 more besides the ones that are already in the mix. And the Iowa Democratic Party wasn't very specific about the changes they would make to the caucuses. I just think the Democratic National Committee is much more likely to say no caucuses for presidential selection purposes. I just think that there is so much sentiment within the Democratic Party that caucuses are too difficult for people to participate in. And there has to be something more like a primary where there's true absentee ballot participation and people aren't required to be in a certain a place at a specific date and time.
Let's name those competitors who have filed to, again, try to become first: New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Georgia, Texas, Colorado, and Washington State, a diverse group of states with a variety of demography in each state.
Yes, I think that there will be pressure on the DNC not to start in a very large state like Texas or New York or Illinois because it is so expensive to compete on the media. I think there's always been an argument for starting in smaller states. And so I do think that it's more likely they'll pick a smaller state or medium-sized state to start in. I think that it's interesting that people who were part of these battles in the 1980s to preserve Iowa's place in the order, some of them have said to me over the years, it's one thing for everyone to say they hate the Iowa caucuses, but are they going to agree on who should come first if it's not Iowa? And so in that sense, you could say it's good news that these 14 states are vying for the spot. It might be much more threatening to Iowa if only two or three states were looking to be first, and then there would be a greater chance of some sort of consensus within the Democratic National Committee to support that alternative calendar.
45 seconds. The state legislature is still deadlocked on the issue of private school tuition assistance. Nothing's happening there. Do you see any logjam being broken up here?
My sources continue to tell me that the votes are not there in the Iowa House and they're not close to being there. So I think at this point, it's more likely that they won't finish work on the budget until after the June 7th primary. But there are Iowa House Republicans who are bragging about being against the governor's school voucher proposal. So it certainly doesn't seem like very many people have been persuaded or intimidated to change their stand on that.
So this thing, they have to end by the end of June, don't they, because of the budget?
They have to pass the budget and the budget bills have to be signed into law by June 30th because the next fiscal year starts on July 1st. So they don't want a state government shutdown.
That is it. What a show. We are out of time. Laura, we'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
You have been listening to Capitol Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will zoom right back here in this time slot next week, literally, when we'll have the latest on what's going on politically inside and outside the state capitol. Until then, thank you so very much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we truly value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.
We are closing out the second half of Capitol Week with Senator Janet Peterson giving a recap of legislation about women's health care and the effects of privatization of Medicare. This was part of a forum of Moral Mondays put on by the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Connie, and Interfaith Alliance. Thanks for hosting this today. And to every volunteer and organization that's part of the progressive lobby, thank you so much for doing all the work you're doing at the State House. It has been probably the darkest legislative session that I have ever participated in, starting off on day one when the Senate president went after school teachers and librarians, threatening to throw them in jail, accusing the media and teachers of having a sinister agenda. We saw the Iowa Senate choose for the first time in history to ban the media from the Senate floor. It has been an extremely tough session. And I have said many times that Iowans should not be scared that their civil rights are on the line when the legislature is in session. But under the current extreme Republicans leading the State House and leading the governor's office, that's exactly what we're seeing. We saw it happen to transgender girls and women just last Thursday when they were banned from participating in girls' sports with their friends. And we have to do everything in our power to stop this discriminatory style of legislation from moving forward. I want to talk just briefly about the cost of this extreme attack on women's healthcare, because we're seeing it not only for Iowans who are trying to access family planning or access a safe legal abortion, but we're also seeing this attack on women's healthcare impacting pregnant women in our state. Since Governor Reynolds privatized Medicaid, we have seen a number of labor and delivery departments in hospitals across our state shut their doors because Medicaid reimbursement is far too low, and it's a money-losing business for them, and they have to make a gut-wrenching decision of what they want to do, whether they shut down care to women and girls or, you know, continue losing money as a hospital. And last summer, I wrote a letter to the department, to DHS and to the governor's office saying that we've got to do something to make sure that we are funding women's healthcare at a level that will allow us to not see hospitals dumping women's services overboard. And I requested some data from them, and I think Iowans need to know just how detrimental the Reynolds budget or Medicaid is to women's healthcare. In CY20, Amerigroup, the difference between what our local hospitals billed for labor and delivery services and what they were provided back, there was almost $19 million in unpaid bills from Amerigroup to Iowa providers. And to Iowa Total Care, that amount was also more than $19 million. And that's just 1 year alone. So when you add those two numbers together, you get close to $40 million that's not being funded to our local hospitals for providing women's healthcare services. And then when you see Costello put forth a bill that would do two things, one, good for women by providing 12 months postpartum care, which every state in the country should be doing. He combines that with a fake clinic bill that would allow out-of-state nonprofit who we've seen in other states providing bogus information to women needing healthcare services, instead of funding providers here in Iowa who are completely already underfunded. The other thing I would say, Senate Democrats introduced a number of positive bills to help women with their healthcare services. We had a bill that would have made sure that people going to school had access to menstruation products free of charge. That bill was assigned to two men. They refused to hold a subcommittee on it. We also had a bill for getting rid of the tax on menstruation products and diapers, both adult and infant diapers. That bill was killed. We had the bill for the 12-month postpartum check. As you see, that bill has been held hostage by combining it with a fake clinic component. We also had a bill that would allow doulas to be covered by Medicaid, and we are seeing across the country much better birth outcomes when women have access to people who will advocate and champion for them. That bill also did not get a subcommittee. So we're seeing a number of positive bills that are moving nowhere. At the same time, we're seeing bill after bill attacking women's health care. And Carla did a great job outlining the bulk of the bills that are still surviving. The one thing I will say, which we've seen every session, you know, we're 2 weeks away from funnel. That's great, because hopefully these bills won't make it past funnel. But we know what happens. We know these bills get dumped into budget bills in the middle of the night. And the women who they impact are not alerted. But the lobbying groups that are on a mission to make sure that women's health care in our state is worse than health care for livestock continues to get their legislation through in these budget bills. So we need to be on high alert, and we need all of your help to make sure that people know that these bills, you know, until we're done with session, that there's a good chance that some of these bills may resurface in the final days of session. And we have a big fight on our hands with the constitutional amendment coming up in November of 2024. And so we need to make sure that we have our friends ready to go, explaining what's on the line for young families in Iowa who want just plain access to decent health care, who want family planning services, who want to be able to deliver a baby in their hometown. That should not be too much to ask. Iowa women and girls deserve access to science-based health care, and they and a chance to not have legislators pushing doctors to put misinformation that's not science-based and supported by science in their clinics. We deserve access to safe healthcare close to home. And I could go on and on about that, but I know that, Connie, I think I'll turn it over to you from here.
Of our first question from Irene, how, what, when women's health care is worse than livestock? So to Senator Peterson, what legislation was Senator Peterson referring to?
Well, I guess what I'm saying when it's worse than livestock is that you have a better chance of accessing health care from a veterinarian in our state than you do from an OBGYN. Our state is ranked 50 out of 50 in terms of the number of OBGYNs per capita. So we're the worst in the nation. And then when you see legislation that's brought forth from lawmakers encouraging our medical providers to provide bogus healthcare information to their patients, that makes it harder for us to recruit top talent to our state. The other thing I'd also say is, you know, we have far fewer family practitioners that are taking on labor and delivery services in our state anymore, and that's a problem. We also don't have as many doctors that specialize in menopause care and care for women with issues that they're facing related to menstruation, and those are huge issues, you know. Many women face debilitating periods that cause them to stay out of the workforce or, you know, not able to go to work because it's so painful. And we're also seeing a number of healthcare services related to taking care of your periods that aren't covered by insurance and discrimination in health insurance. And we had a bill that we introduced this year, a health equity fund bill, that would have used all of the money that comes into the state women who are Iowans who menstruate and Iowans who use diaper products that are taxed for those services. If they're not going to get rid of the tax, let's put that into a health equity fund so that women who or Iowans who need access to hormone treatment or treatment for endometriosis or menopause care, UTI care, if they're seeing that their insurance won't cover the procedure they need, they could go to the health equity fund through their physician to get the care they need, so that they can lead a decent life and not be in pain. I know that urinary tract infections is the number one undiagnosed reason for women to enter the hospital ages 65 and older. And these are issues we should be addressing. The other concern I have, every time that a bill related to period healthcare gets assigned to two men who refuse to have a subcommittee on it, that means that women don't get access to the care they need. It is an issue that affects thousands and thousands of Iowans, and they keep sweeping it aside. And we are seeing issues related to period healthcare that go on to impact women with osteoporosis. Women are twice as likely to get Alzheimer's than men. And many of these issues we could be addressing if we had better access to period healthcare across our state. But if we continue to have politicians who want to be in the exam room, who want to tell doctors to play bogus medicine, we're going to continue to have a struggle in getting decent health care in rural areas and in urban areas in our state. Long answer.
Carla, I want to go back to the bill, Senate File 2354. And this is what they call the mom's bill and the fake clinic pieces of it. And another issue that we have as an organization with that bill is there are, you can have a provider, the nonprofits that you all referenced, and there's no restriction on religion or religious requirements. And sometimes we see that language in bills, not as much lately, but we have in the past. But if you're going to be a provider of a service of this type, not forcing religion on clients, not requiring religious practices of clients or requiring that of employees. And is that, Carla, is that a concern for you as well?
I think it is, Connie. I think what we have to remember about these kind of bills, and Senator Costello, I really think he thinks he's trying to help. It would be more helpful if he would just fund the safety net providers that we have in the state of Iowa already. But they don't want to do that. They want to take it out of the nonprofits here in Iowa that have done excellent work for years and years, and they want to put it into the hands of these religious community-based nonprofits or profit. It's hard to know what the requirements around that will be. He wants to use Medicaid money for this also. This isn't state dollars he's talking about. He wants to be able to pull down federal match for these programs. Well, Medicaid has some pretty strict rules about religion. And in order for them to be able to get this grant money or whatever, however they're going to pay for these services, there needs to be some kind of requirements in the grant process or in the payment process that says that they are not going to be, talking about religion and those kind of things. I think one of the other big concerns I have about that bill is that he put it in after I made a comment about fraud and how fraudulent that it has found to be in the Texas program. But fraud in Medicaid is a very serious issue. But if they don't follow that through with the state dollars that they may put into it, if it's not just Medicaid money, Medicaid is state match, but I mean like general fund money, not pulling down any kind of federal money if they put any of those dollars in. We have to make sure that there isn't fraud in those too, because we're taxpayers. We have a right to know how those dollars are being spent. And if they're being spent fraudulently to send people to Hawaii or to buy a new car for the owner of the nonprofit, we need to have that information so we can make sure that those things don't happen here in the state of Iowa. I'm not saying that people in the state of Iowa are not honest, and I think that they are. But fraud does exist here in Iowa, and there have been instances when I worked at the Department of Human Services long ago that there were people that were fraudulently using, you know, dollars, state dollars and Medicaid dollars, and they got caught because we have a good fraud team. But, you know, those are the concerns that I've had, and how does that balance out when we start looking at the fact that the excellent programs and the excellent nonprofits we have in the state are not being funded anymore because they believe that what we're doing is wrong. And it's not wrong. It's about providing health care to women in the way that they want to receive that care.
Connie, if I could chime in, you know, when the Republicans took over and gutted the successful Iowa family planning program, it was a 90 to 10 match, you know, so Iowans, for every dime we put in, we got 90 cents from the feds, and it was a highly successful program. When they want to put their own rules around things and we're unable to tap into federal match dollars, that just costs taxpayers more money for less services and less reliable services for Iowans. The other thing I would also add that I think we all need to be on a lookout is we're seeing providers across our state that are unwilling to provide family planning services to women. So, you know, you really need to be asking your healthcare providers what their policies are, and do they provide full services to Iowans that deserve access to comprehensive family planning services?
Thank you. So I don't know who wants to answer this, maybe Sheena. Jane asks, I know it's hard to predict court decisions. Do we have our crystal ball? But what are your thoughts about the Iowa Supreme Court case based on the oral arguments? And I don't know if I'm sure Jane watched them because she watches a lot of the important information, but it was impressive oral arguments, at least on our side of the equation. And Rita Bettis Austin from ACLU did an amazing job. But your thoughts on that, Sheena?
There is a real threat. It's hard to say. We don't have that crystal ball of how things are going to go. But given the makeup of the court now compared to 2018, when it was more friendly towards us. I think since then, four of the seven justices have been replaced by the governor. And so it's a more conservative leaning court. And there is a real threat there. But I'll let Senator Peterson or Carla add on to that.
Well, I'll just say, and if they want to chime in, so the compelling argument is based on precedent. And if we have hope in that, it's that the court tends to, regardless of conservative or liberal, but we have a puppy in the, the court tends to look at precedent. So that's where I have hope in this. And I don't know if Senator Carla, you want to add to that? Otherwise, we can go on to the next question.
I think you did a great job, Connie.
So Kelly asked, Senator Peterson, looks like SSB 3154, the one to follow for the exemption of sales tax for period products and diapers. Looks like there's a subcommittee maybe tomorrow. And I hadn't seen that on the calendar. So that's awesome if that's the same bill that you're referencing.
Good news.
Chris Bell, nope. Sorry. Chris Bell chimed in and clarified it. I should read all the way down that your bill, Senator Peterson, is Senate File 2020. So we'll have to go look and see what Senate Study Bill 3154 is.
Okay. She says it's Dawson's tax bill.
Yeah. So I'm sure it is a little different than yours. So
Dawson's tax bill is supposed to be those things that weren't in the regular tax bill that they couldn't agree on. So he's got his own tax bill that he's going to run. Sorry.
I did ask Senator Dawson to consider it. I'm not sure what will happen.
Okay. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and let folks know. Carla, what's the name of your puppy?
You're on mute.
You're on mute.
My puppy's name is Tonks. She's named after Nymphadora Tonks from Harry Potter. Nymphadora was named, her nickname was Dora or Tonks in the books. And I'm a Harry Potter fan.
Nice. It is not a Zoom unless there are puppies or small children that are part of it. So I'm not seeing any other questions. So if folks have anything, and Kristen shares that Tonks is adorable and Tonks is. I'm not seeing any other questions. So if anybody does, they can throw that in real quick. A different Kristen says, thank you for all that you are doing this session and always we appreciate you. And that's really to all of you and all the work that you're doing. So Kelly asked, do you think there is opportunity still to support the extension of postpartum coverage? So back to the mom's bill, I think, and that portion of it.
Well, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I know that Governor Reynolds knows that this is a weak area for her. I mean, there's no denying how labor and delivery across our state is just going down the drain. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that there may be hope for it. But Carla, I think you said that Joel Fry had no indication that it was part of his budget.
Right. I don't know that Costello and Fry have even had a conversation this year yet. I know that Fry has talked to Senator Edler about some other things going on that I think there's, as with any session, there's a lot of, I want my bill, you want your bill. How are we going to come to the middle going on right now? So I think it's also one of the reasons we don't know who is starting bills, because I think there's a lot of maneuvering on what they want in that first blush of the bill and what will happen when it goes across and whether or not they'll be able to change it or not, depending upon how it's built. So, you know, it's just normal kind of end of session. For those of you that don't know, this always happens during session. It just seems a little bit more, I don't know. It feels different this year, I guess, is the only thing I can say.
Yeah, there's always shenanigans that happen, but it's kind of a different level of. So, right. All right. Well, I'm going to close things out here. Senator Janet Peterson, Carla Folks McHenry, excuse me, can't speak today. Sheena Dooley, thank you so much for being with us and for all your work at the State House, each of you, and getting messages out and information out to folks. We really appreciate it. For everybody who is on Moral Mondays Iowa on Zoom or on Facebook, we are glad you're with us and very glad that you're part of the conversation. The thing that I would leave you with is please do take action on these bills and let your senators and representatives know what you think about them and concerns about them. So everybody else, I'm just glad that you're with us and take care. Have a great week. Appreciate it.
We are closing out the second half of Capitol Week with Senator Janet Peterson giving a recap of legislation about women's health care and the privatization, the effects of privatization of Medicare. This was part of a forum of Moral Mondays put on by the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa.
Had a rough day? Could your spirits use a lift to help brighten your outlook on life? Here's an idea. Embellish that evening snack, whether it be ice cream, popcorn, or a warm slice of honey-flavored banana bread, by enhancing its flavor with a helping of heart-to-heart messages. Host Anna Magnuson of Iowa Able will soothe your thoughts with offers of poems, music, and special guests that will stimulate thought and add comfort as you unwind from your day. Listen to Heart live over the airwaves or on your streaming device Tuesday evenings at 8:30 p.m. on KHOI Community Radio. We are your Heart of Iowa.
I'm Gregory Nava. When you think about why it is so important to wear a mask, you wear a mask not for yourself. You wear it to protect your family, to protect your friends, so we protect each other. Isn't this what we've been taught in the Bible? You know, love your neighbor as yourself. There's great humanity in that. So wear a mask. We have to protect each other through this horrible pandemic. And this is the most basic and simplest thing that we can do. It's not difficult. It's so simple, but it does so much, and it shows so much love.